Hi everyone, I'm Jim, I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the new person. Step three. Before I came down here, my wife said to me, do you want me to just go and do it for you? And I said, it says made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, not the care of Loretta, as we understood him. In the first step, we learned that we had lost the power of choice and had to make a decision. What decision could we make, or could we better make than to turn our very will over to God, realizing that our own use of our own will had resulted in trouble? Our own will. I know this step talks about God, and when I make reference to God, I'm making reference to a higher power. I just say God because it's easier, easier to say, set a higher power over and over again. So if I do make reference to God, you can plug your own higher power into whatever. As in the Lord's Prayer, we ought to believe and practice, "Thy will be done." God as we understand him. Religion is a word we do not use in AA. We refer to a member's relationship to God as the spiritual. A religion is a form of worship, not the worship itself. If a person cannot believe in God, he can certainly believe in something greater than himself. If he cannot believe in a power greater than himself, he is rather hopeless, egotist. And what I mean by that is, if you got yourself sober, you can get yourself sober anytime you want. So why are you here? If you're God, or if you think you can do it. I could not do that. I had to seek a power greater than myself because I had no answer for alcoholism. For more answers to questions about this step or any other step, recommend that you look into the Big Book. There's a lot of stories in the Big Book that talks about how people come to their relationship with a higher power. And that's what those stories do. What we find is that self-will that each of us has has to be replaced. We have to learn a whole new way of life. We have to learn a whole new way of thinking. We have to actually listen to someone else and say, yeah, that's better than the way I was thinking about it. And that's hard to do because ego gets in the way. We think we all know what we're talking about. Success with his steps and other steps is not a matter of chance, but of right thought and motive, practice on a daily basis. Knowledge and treatment of our physical and mental health are vitally important to us. But lasting contented sobriety is maintained only by surrender of our lives and wills to God as we understand him. And you ask most of the old timers in AA what's the unifying thing between them, and that's they each have a higher power. It could be the group, it could be whatever. But somebody greater than themselves. A complete knowledge of the physical, mental, and spiritual injury we have suffered from John Barleycorn is indispensable to the honest, far-reaching decision we wish to make. Deliberation born of necessity and a desperate need of help will inspire us to seek our understanding of God. They used to call it foxhole prayers. You'd get so desperate, where you, God, get me out of this one. And then when the trauma or whatever passed, here we thought we were in the clear. So you forget about God again. Step three offers no compromise. This step is so important for the rest of AA to happen. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 does not happen without step 3. In all the years that I've been in around AA, when the fourth and fifth step is mentioned to a new person who, or someone who is learning to do this step, those steps, when they hesitate, they're always told, go back to step 3. They always make that reference, go back to step 3, because you are turning your life over to a power greater than yourself, a power that maybe you don't have any idea what he's going to say. You know, working for God is probably the hardest thing you'll ever do. His will is not easy. It's not easy at all. You know, when that phone call comes at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know, and you went to bed that night and say, thank God, thanks for all you're doing for me. You know, and the next thing you know, you're going, oh crap. You know, and you have to get out of bed. But you've made that decision. Or when you walk into a prison, or when you do a rehab, or when you do this. That's one of my prayers. I don't even say anything, he knows. Step 3 offers no compromise with reservations or delays. It calls for a decision here and now. How we surrender our alcoholic personality defects to God is of no immediate concern. And the important thing is our willingness to try. If you're sick and tired of where you came from and you want to try a new way of life, you know, that's what we have to offer. And nobody does a perfect in here. Nobody, I don't do a perfect, that's for sure. But we're willing to try. We're willing to aspire. We're willing to be better than what we are. Alcoholics are dynamic people. We're empathy. We have empathy beyond measure. We relate well with other alcoholics. And it's been proven time and time again to me when I met them, alcoholics from all over the world. We're all pretty much people that we like. It's kind of weird that way. When we speak to one another, we know what we're talking about. We know where we're coming from. You know. Having made this crucial decision, our mental attitude changes rapidly from negative to constructive thinking. Not from negative to positive, but from negative to constructive thinking. How do I fix this? And that's where the word we comes in. How do we fix this? We lose our uncertainty and fear, strife and rebellion disappear. It's one of our biggest character defects is that, you know, that authority thing. Don't tell me what to do. I know better. We've been so defensive because of our drinking, we start to put these barriers up. We get behind them. And we shout out over top of them, you know, and we try to defend any position we take, no matter how ludicrous, because we're always right. And sometimes it's kind of, it can be very frustrating for the people that are around us. Somehow we seem to gain a vague understanding of God's will for us. Anybody that's got a conscious contact with their higher power knows what I'm talking about. Just a little, perhaps, but as little as all we need to start with. It comes slowly at first. If you've been sober for a long time and you have a higher power, you know what that conscious contact is like. I always tell people I'd be lost without it. It's there. It's always there. You know. And no matter what happens to me during the day, it's always there. I can give you some examples. I was driving a school bus and I was sitting in front of a school and my phone rang and I picked it up and my wife is crying and she said she has leukemia. And instead of freaking out and saying dumb stuff or whatever, you know, the old ways, I said, you know, I gave that, what do we do? And when I got back and we talked about it, that overwhelming sense of no matter what happens in our lives, everything's going to be okay. We were 2 weeks away from a vacation. She asked the doctor if it would be okay to go on vacation, just cut the chemo down until we got back. We got on a cruise ship, we walked to our room, and that night there was an AA meeting in the library, and I walked into the library and I was kind of all distraught and upset because I was kind of lost. I didn't know how to handle this situation, but I was kind of lost. I knew everything was going to be all right, but I was still lost. I walked into the room, I sat down, there was a gentleman sitting there who had 23 or 24 years of sobriety, and I said, "Is this an AA meeting?" And he said, "Yeah, you're a friend of Bill and Bob's, you know, the usual." And before he finished saying he was, he said to me, "I need to talk to somebody. My wife is dying of cancer." And we sat there for 14 days on a cruise ship, and we talked about today. And no matter what happens in our lives, we have today. We have those people that are close to us today. And when I was done with him and he was done with me and he went back to his life and I went back to my life, I got a greater understanding of today. But I also got one of those aha moments, you know. I got my answers that I was seeking. That we really only have today. Just today. You know? Down the road, who knows what's going to happen, but we have today. Quiet periods of relaxation and prayer are most necessary to the achievement of this step. We should learn to relax whenever we become upset, overactive, impatient, angry, bored, or resentful. How do you do that when you're in the middle of an argument? How do you do that when you're upset about something, or you have low blood sugar and you want to argue with somebody and you're angry, or your boss tells you to do something and you're already doing three things and, you know, doesn't he understand? Don't people understand me? How do you do that? How do you relax? For me, when I was new in sobriety, I would walk away from my job and I would go into the bathroom and I would just hide there for a minute and I'd say, "Please take this away. I can't handle this. There's just too much going on at once." And what happened out of that was I started writing things down. And for 20 years I kept a journal. And looking back over that journal, I found that a lot of things that I thought were so doggone important were insignificant. But what happened was you could see a maturing process and I started to grow up. And that was a great help to me. After 20 years, I didn't want anybody to ever see that journal, so I burned it and my wife cried. Here she had been reading it. She said it would have been something for our kids to see. But it was such a personal thing to me. It was between me and my God. And I can't let anything get in the way between me and my God, whether it's my job, whether it's other people. Because this, I would never be where I'm at today without him. I remember standing at the time clock in early sobriety. And every Friday when the guys got paid, they would say, "Hey, come on, let's go out and get drunk. Let's go get drink. Let's bars across the street." And every week I would say, no, I'm going. And then one day, one of the guys said, "What are you, one of them alcoholics or something? You don't drink." And I said, "No, my God doesn't want me to drink." And they looked at me and he said, "Oh, you're one of them." "You're one of them Jesus freaks or something, you know." And they never bothered me after that. So there's power there. Might not think what, you know, of being a power, but there is a power there. And because of that, three guys who also didn't drink like I did, we became friends at work. And we used to sit and talk about, they used to talk about their God. They were religious people, and I would talk about mine. And, you know, I searched, my first 13 years of sobriety, I searched for God everywhere. everywhere. I went to retreats. I found it funny that God had a sense of humor. I never thought about God having a sense of humor. And then I watched that movie, Oh God, with George Burns. And he made fun. He said, I made a mistake there. And I thought, God don't make mistakes. And I'm thinking, it's my conception. Made in His image and likeness. Sense of humor. I have a sense of humor. I didn't have a sense of humor. You know, like I told you early on, Andy would call me at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning on his break, and he'd tell me a stupid joke, and then he'd hang up because he said I was too damn wound up, too tight. And anybody who knows Andy Daniels knows. His brother John and his father, they were all like that. Our great need is loss of self-centeredness and alcoholic obsession. Self-centeredness kills the alcoholic. You just don't understand. I'm different. I'm going to change AA to suit me instead of changing me to suit AA. There, you get into trouble when you start thinking like that. AA pioneers discovered their answers to these problems that they developed a spiritual understanding and relied upon God's help for recovery. Each of us has the same possibilities if we are honest, humble, and willing to work them out. Like I said, 13 years I searched for God. I even went to an exorcist who worked for the Pope. I've seen it all. What I understand is that, you know, God's not lost. He's always there. He's right there. I guess I wanted a literal description or something that I could write down. But it's a overwhelming sense of presence is the only way I can describe my higher power. I know He's there because I feel Him. You know, and I could tell you about some of the most amazing spiritual things that have happened in my life. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And the people that God has steered me to, the lives that I'm intermingled with, all I ever wanted was just to, you know, just have a little peace of mind, which I eventually got, but I got it through the people in here. If fear of public opinion, spiritual bias, or hypocritical ideas stand in our way, we learn to overcome them. We have no other choice. For, you know, some people they go to church or whatever, or they pray whenever. We don't have a choice if we want to live. We have to turn our will and lives over to someone else. For us, it's not a choice. You know, other people, they may be able to do that, but we can't. And you can't really explain that to somebody that's not an alcoholic because they wouldn't understand. It's a small price to pay for life and sanity, particularly when we learn that our prejudice is but preconceived judgment inspired by ill health, ignorance, and false pride. You okay? It's okay. Get a drink or something. Yeah. Public opinion is for, not against us. Spiritual biases, but self-will and does not yield to reason. Trying to understand God's will for us is not hypocritical. It is a basic recovery principle for sick, alcoholic people. It never fails those who sincerely use it. Anybody that's been on 12-step calls or worked with a person may be able to relate to this. When you go and you talk to them, and you don't know what you're going to say, and all of a sudden the words come out, and it's like you're hearing them for the first time. Or somebody at a meeting has a problem, or someone, even if they're not in the program, has something going on in their lives that's really bothering them, all of a sudden the words come. And you hear them for the first time. And you're amazed. And then you say thanks. Because I really didn't have nothing. I really didn't know what I was going to say. I never know what I'm going to say when I'm up here. I don't really think about it until I get up here, you know. I have this guide I follow, but this guide's from 1971, before they had those books. That's the AA I grew up on. Where you sit. The AA I grew up on was where the old timers would take your inventory on a regular basis, and you either stayed or you left. You had to learn that people can be cruel, that people can be hard, that people are going to be people, and we have to learn to get tough, not change them. We don't change their circumstances, we change us. And we do that by growing up. We do that by pulling that power greater than ourselves with us so that we can overcome other people's prejudices or other people's affinities or whatever they have for us. It's what we do. The public's only knowledge of our lives is that we no longer drink. They don't feel what we felt. They didn't go through what we went through. So how can they really know? They did not approve of our drinking, but honor and receive us when we stop. How many times? Oh, you hear at this podium people saying, I went and made an amends, and that person said, just keep doing what you're doing. You know, stop. They want to stop you. They're glad to see you stop destroying them and yourselves. You know, people basically are good. I found that out. They are basically good. They want you to succeed. They don't want you to kill them. They don't want you to beat them up. They don't want you to destroy the families or break up the families. When I came into the fellowship, they had long stopped inviting me to Christmas parties and family outings and stuff like that, because I was always the one who got in a fight and argument and all that other stuff. And some of my family that are in this room were the same as me, so that was just like, oh boy, it's on, you know. And then when I came in here and I got invited to a Christmas party, my brother-in-law used to snap beer cans in my face and say, you can't drink, trying to get me to go. He just celebrated 25 years of sobriety. And I was the first person he called when he called for help. And I 12-stepped him. And now his son is in the program. And he's got some years of sobriety. I never responded to that. We don't have to respond every time somebody does something. We don't have to have an answer for everything. Sometimes it's just good to just shut up and walk away. We don't always have to be right. We are not being honest with ourselves when we refuse to seek an understanding of God or to draw upon His help and power. We still reason along the lines of alcoholic thinking. It is hard to surrender the rationalization alibis of our alcoholic personalities. We're the best liars out there. We lie to ourselves to the point where we start to believe it. And the only way we can ever stop that is to have the people in AA shout it down. Remember I told you about the old timers taking my inventory? Well, I would come up with this great idea and they'd say, you're an idiot. And I would say, why are you talking to me like that? Why are you guys being so mean? Shut up and listen. For 1 year, I was not allowed to say anything. No comment, no nothing. Because I didn't know anything. My sponsor said, you do not know anything about sobriety. So what do you have to offer? I didn't have anything to offer. After I learned a few things, I could pass it on. But before that, it's all stuff I'm making up in my head. You have to learn the stuff before you can give it away. And I couldn't wait to say my first thing at a meeting. I had a year in the fellowship, and I asked my sponsor, can I say anything? And he says, yeah, you can. When somebody leads and they ask for comments, you can give a comment. And so this guy led, and I immediately, you know, it was my turn. All right, you slimes, I'm going to tell you what I know. The guy got done leading. I stood up and I said, my name's so-and-so, Jim, I'm an alcoholic. And I said, I really enjoyed your lead. And I sat down. I thought that was really cool. Because now, unlike in my home group, we have a guy who's got 4 years and he just got an opinion. And I had an opinion at 1 year. Usually, you know, and we kid each other. You know, we can be hard on each other, and that's because we love each other. It's not that we're getting over on you. We just don't want to see you die. We don't want you calling us again at 2:00 in the morning. I mean, it's okay to do, but just stay. You know? Just stay. I heard someone say, that's probably a rehab thing, I don't know. It's much easier to stay here than it is to get here, or to stay out there, or be out there. It's harder to be out there. That's crap. To change your whole life in another direction, to ask for a power greater than yourself, not many of us make it. It's harder in here. And to those that do it, and you have a sponsor, I remember my sponsor the first time he patted me on the back and he said, wow, that was great, when we went on 12-step calls or whatever. But it was easy. Standing on a porch at 2:00 in the morning and the lights are all off and it's dark and you knock on a door and you're wondering, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? And then I say, God, help me. Help me to help this person. Before I get up here and speak, I say, God, help me. We have a new person. That's a wonderful thing. Wonderful. We're here to get better, you know, day at a time. And we need to rely on something greater than us, because our way of thinking got us here. A great barrier to finding God is impatience. We soon learn that spiritual attainment must be earned. Since this is no overnight process, we suggest thought and prayer. Before next week is fourth and fifth steps together. Before you even consider taking a fourth and fifth step, it's more important that this step be thoroughly going over, because you're going to need strength to do something like that, to actually look at yourself in a calm and orderly fashion, and not to beat yourself up because you may have screwed up a bunch of times. But you need that little extra. I remember writing my fourth step out, and it took months, and I told my sponsor, he kept asking me if it was done, and I said, it's not finished yet. And he said, then you haven't finished your third step. You got to ask God again to help you. Keep going through that third step. My higher power is... He's been there for me. I work for him. That's our deal. He takes care of my alcoholism, and I take care of the things that he needs done here, whatever that might be. And every day there's opportunities for to be of service to others. And like I said earlier, I think I said it in the first day, we don't get sober because we're going to sit there and meditate ourselves into a coma. We get sober because we have to do God's work, and that's to help another alcoholic, because somebody actually took the time for us. Somebody actually sat there. I was astounded. You know, I was 21 years old, and somebody actually sat across the table and listened to what I had to say, and I didn't have to buy him a beer. You know? Or they took me out to a restaurant when I didn't have any money, or they bought me cigarettes when I didn't have any money. And all they ever asked me to do was to give it back when I had means or things to give back that later on. You know, to help the other still suffering. And I managed to follow that little thing. It's been a really good working relationship we got. It really is. I love my God. Like I said, I wouldn't know what I'd do without him. He's always given me the right things to say when I need to. He's protected me in ways that are astounding. I've had a lot of spiritual moments. Walking into the Vatican for the first time with the people that were with us, and you know, this is God's house. I'm thinking this is God's house, you know. Well, it's really cute, you know. There's a lot of nice stuff. This woman comes walking out of nowhere. John Paul just died, and they had all these people were walking in a long line up to the where they had him interred in a side alcove. And this woman came walking up to me and she said, "There's something very different about you." This is a woman I don't know. She was an archaeologist that worked for the Pope. And she said, "There's something very spiritual about you. I don't know what it is." And I just looked at Loretta and I didn't know what to say. And then I just said, "It must be because we both work for the same God." And she said, "That's probably it." So if you're afraid of God, or a higher power, or if you think you've just done so many wrong things that God could never forgive you or whatever, He forgave me, and I did some really crappy things. Really crappy. I made a lot of people's lives miserable. People were very, very glad to see me get sober. But it was nothing that I did. I can't take the credit for it. I wish I could. You know, I wish I was that smart. But then my ego is what the problem is. Without God in my life, I can become an egomaniac. I got to work on that constantly. The greatest strength in Alcoholics Anonymous and any alcoholic has is his humility. It's the essence of our sobriety. It's the essence of our fellowship. Our humility. Humility through anonymity. Humility through a higher power. These are all tied in together. And again, and I talk all the time, it's to kill the ego, to kill that self-centeredness, that stuff that always gets us in trouble. If we don't do that, then we're lost. We're lost until we can find something we can hold on. I really don't have much else to say. I hope, I always like to hear about other people's higher powers, you know, and how they come to that understanding, or how they come to that thing. And I could give you so many more examples, but I want to save some of that stuff for later on. So I think I'm going to shut up and you guys can talk.
Thank you. Now we have a question and answering portion. We ask that you have all comments are in the form of a question. Does anybody have any questions? Don't make it run.
Hi, I'm Michelle. I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Michelle.
So recently I started asking God to let me do His will, and took me a while because, you know, self-centered and controlling and everything. And so my sponsor was like, okay, good. Now all you have to do is, you know, get a relationship with Him. And I was like, okay, yeah, but I got home and I'm totally baffled by that. Like, what is the difference between, you know, just asking for help or that having conscious contact and having a relationship?
You will over time begin to realize that things that are happening to you or things that are in your life, these, you'll start getting these like little God moments, and you will recognize them. God will lose His anonymity to you, and you'll say, oh yeah, that just happened. And it's not something you can force. It's something that if you just, like my sponsor said, just keep your head down, put one foot in front of the other, and then all of a sudden as you start to view the bigger world, you'll start seeing these little miracles. You'll start seeing them happening in your life. For some people, it might be you get a kid back they lost, or a relationship that's blossoming, or relationships with friends and things like that. When you start to feel comfortable in that zone, you can start to say, I'm catching on, and it'll come. But it's not something you can actually force. It's something you recognize through a time. You know, you'll see it. Just stick around. They always say, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. I always like to say, don't leave until you see these things happen. Because you will. You will. It's just amazing. I used to 12-step priest for the diocese around here. And when I would take them to a meeting, and they would say to me, oh my God. They've been to seminary. They've been to meditative and prayer things. But when they came to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, they had never ever felt the power of God like they did in our rooms. They could feel it. And I feel that. I feel that all the time. And you will too. Stick around. Don't want to spoil the surprise too much.
I loved what you said tonight, Jim. The question I have first is, did you have a God of your understanding before you came into Alcoholics Anonymous?
I had a God. I was raised Catholic. In fact, I was going to be a priest until Lisa came around.
Okay.
And then I discovered that there were other powers greater than myself. And like I said, I had a spiritual experience that, in fact, I just told Loretta about it yesterday. She had never known. I just mentioned it last week here, but my conception of a power greater than myself is a God who has a hell of a sense of humor. I haven't had a desire to drink, and before it was all encompassing. My anger issues, most of them are lifted. And like I said, it's been a developing thing. It's like having a friend with you at all times. You know, somebody you can rely on that'll help you. So that's all I can describe it.
Thank you. And secondly, I'm going to ask you an opinion. Because there's been questions back and forth in the rooms. I know the old timer said, don't talk for a year because you have nothing to say. But I personally can feel the presence of God when I hear somebody talking that just came in and is expressing their fears and stuff, because it makes me realize and remember. I don't want to go back there. So I guess I'm asking you that opinion. Do you believe that you really should be quiet the first year, or is it?
Most definitely. And okay. There's a reason for that. The reason is that instead of listening to what other people have to say, if you're going to put pressure on yourself to speak, you'll sit there for half an hour until it gets to you, and then you'll try to come up with something witty or something spiritual, something to astound the group because of our ego. I just talked about our ego. And so for me, I was being young when I came in, they told me, and most people back then, it was for a year, was to take the pressure off yourself. Learn how to listen. Don't try and wow the crowd with what you have to say. What you want to do is learn how to listen. I was the kid in school, you know, that was always looking out the window. But most of the time you see me at a meeting, I sit up front because I'm so easily distracted. When you learn how to listen, you have that ability to help yourself. When you're constantly trying to think of something to say, when you go home, you start to critique what you said. So be careful of that. So if I sponsor a guy, and I sponsor a few of these guys around here, it's important that they learn how to listen. We have enough people in the world talking. For God's sakes. You know? Young people today, they never shut up. And they're talking to you. Like my daughter, she came over on Sunday and she's, and I said, "Are you here or are you there?" Or Loretta, "Are you here or are you there?" You know, and we're losing that. We're losing that direct communication with people.
Anybody else?
All right.